Hello and welcome to this week's Leader Talk podcast with Fintan Duffy. Coming up, the rebuilding of St. Mel's Cathedral and how the Catholic Church is responding to clerical sex abuse. We talk to Bishop Colm O'Reilly. The new First Division season is upon us. We'll chat to the new boss at Flancare Park. And on our panel this week, a former TD, a newspaper MD and the CEO of Longford Women's Link. So lots to be getting on with there, and we begin with the Bishop of Arda and Clonmacnoise, Bishop Colm O'Reilly. I've been talking to him this week about the Rome Abuse Summit and the reconstruction of St. Mel's Cathedral.
So I think the roadmap suggests that if we start building in 2012, that's probably realistic. Now that may seem a long way to people. They say, why do you have to wait so long? But the reason we have to wait so long is we have to get it right, not get it quick. And putting all the personnel in place and getting the right advice and the big decisions, that you can't rush, so that'll take time. I imagine that once it gets underway, you know, with a very good building construction team, please God, in place, that it will progress, you know, progress relatively as quickly as can be, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, just beside your shoulder there, we see a wonderful chalice that you brought from Rome, a gift from the Pope himself.
That's right, a gift from the Pope himself. I was very pleased to get that, not for its material value, but the symbolism of it. It was a sign of support, which actually, that's what he wrote in the letter that came with it, that he wanted to show, encourage us and support us in the restoration. So I find that, you know, very, very supportive and affirmative at the present time. So it's a beautiful chalice. And the day that it's rededicated, somebody, I hope, will be able to use it on that day.
Maybe even yourself?
I don't think so.
And you also have vestments here as well.
That's right, with beautiful vestments as well, which are, they're just, you know, these kind of vestments that would only be taken out in any cathedral on a rare occasion, and that's what they will be. But I can imagine that long, long after my time, and long after the people that come after me even, immediately, those vestments will be there. It's very few cathedrals in the world, I'd say, will have objects like that. So they're really, really historic. They will be in time to come.
Now, that was all part of your visit to Rome and the bishop's visit to Rome. Was that a difficult week? Was that a tough week personally for you and for your colleagues?
Yes, it was. It was hard work. I had this sense of being in a moment of history. We were there, a group of about 24 Irish bishops, in a situation that Irish bishops were never in before. 24 people, the Pope listening to us, listened to every one of us, one after the other, sat there at the top of the table, had the text of what we were saying, and he was there with his pen underlining words in it and so on. So that certainly was impressive. I had to pinch myself sometimes almost to think, is this happening? Am I sitting here with, you know, in this situation? And we were, of course. It's the measure in a way of how serious the situation is and how serious Pope Benedict is taking it. So I think there's, that in a way is a bit shocking to some degree, because you'd say, are things that bad? Well, they are, but on the other hand, you know, it's evidence, I think, that it's going to be addressed very strongly and very, very enthusiastically.
Because the survivors of abuse and their campaign groups were very unhappy with the outcome and how that was communicated following your meeting in Rome, because they just felt it's not enough, it's more of the same, they haven't moved on any.
Yeah, well, I think expectations were too high, in my opinion, ahead of time. There's nearly inevitability about people feeling a bit disappointed. I'm saddened that they feel like that, and I certainly wouldn't want that to happen. But I'd be asking them to try and be, you know, be patient with the process, because it was one stage after all. It's not the end of the journey by any manner of means, and we've a long way to go. In the country here, there are still things to come which will be difficult. So we can't write the bottom line, far from it yet. And I don't think the Pope or his advisors thought for a moment that they would be able to hand us out some kind of wonderful answer. which will solve everything. It's not that easy.
So you're saying that in terms of the church's response and how it deals with the problems that are there and the issues that arose over the last number of years, that it will be some time before you can actually complete the process of putting that right?
Oh, I think it will, not any shadow of doubt. I have no false assumption that we will come to the end of the road quickly. There's a lot of work to be done. And on the other hand, you know, it's like rebuilding a cathedral. You can't rebuild the community of the church either overnight, especially when, you know, there was serious neglect in the past. We acknowledge that readily now at this stage. And to repair those gaps in the church is going to be tedious and difficult and painful. Painful for us all, I think.
Two words, apology and redress, is what is being demanded of both yourselves and the Pope. When will we see both of those issues finalised?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes people say to me, we're tired listening to you apologising. But my answer to that is always, I can't say it too often. And obviously that's necessary because people look for that word all the time. I'm quite sure that Pope Benedict wanted to convey that to us. In fact, I think one of my colleagues has said that quite clearly in a letter that he sent out in the diocese. And everything, I'm not sure about the exact word being used, you know, but I think it'd be a pity if we held someone to be neglectful because the exact word we want, but the concept was there. The wish to be reach out to people was certainly there. Now, in the matter of redress, of course, that also is complicated because we have not just dioceses, but we have religious congregations because of the institutions and so on. And probably expectations in that regard were also way beyond what could be fulfilled. So I think that's also going to take some considerable time to tease out. But I do think we have to continue to walk the journey with people who have the feel of the need for continuing support or redress in whatever form. That's going to take time as well. And I wouldn't be able to say when we'll reach journey's end on that one either.
Well, now to this week's panel. My guests include former Progressive Democrat TD Mae Sexton, the Managing Director of the Johnston Press Group of Newspapers in this region, Joe Flaherty, and Tess Murphy from Longford Women's Link. Tess, we'll start with you. And the Longford Manifesto Group are looking to get involved with Longford County Council in their decision-making processes. Why would you want to be involved with Longford County Council and their decision-making process?
Well, that's a good question, but I suppose basically it's currently women are very invisible in local decision-making, whether it's in the County Council or in the local partnership or in the VEC or no matter where decisions are made locally, women are not part of that process. Women are 51% of the population, and I think lots of the decisions, in fact all of the decisions, will impact for good or bad on the women of the community, and yet they don't have any say in how those decisions are made. There's quite, I suppose, a big debate going on currently about how women can be more involved in politics, and we could have gone down that road, but I thought, we thought, I suppose, as a group, that the first place to start was really locally and look at local politics. And we didn't go into that lightly because we've been, for the last year, we've been attending the meetings of Longford County Council. We've been looking at their website. We've been trying, I suppose, to decipher the information that's on the website. And that's very, very difficult. So one of the first things we were looking for really was to get clear information of what actually is happening. And one of the things we noticed from attending the council meetings was that most of the council meetings and most of the debate at the council meeting is a reaction to something that maybe has had an adverse impact. And if you maybe roll back a bit to when the plan is actually made, there's very little debate or discussion when the decisions are actually made. So then if something turns out to have a bad impact, well, then there's a big discussion about it at that time, but the decision could have been made anything, maybe up to a year, 2 years beforehand. You know, the decision, for example, to build on the floodplain, or the decision around the shopping centre, all those decisions to rezone that land were made a long time ago. And it's only when they're having a bad effect that there's a discussion.
Well, let me put that point to May Sexton, because May, you're on the local authority. Let's be clear, it's not you guys who have the decisions and make these decisions. It's the executive. So if the Longford Women's Manifesto wants to get involved, they have to get involved at executive level. Am I right or wrong?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, I thought Tess was... Well, first of all, I expressed my disappointment on the night when you were there. I mean, I thought it was like going back 20 years to when I first got involved in politics and indeed engaged with the, at that time, the Now Women's Centre, and the fight that I had to get at local authority level. And Tess would know this, that in fact the manager, even at that stage, the manager who was there, didn't recognise the need for a Now Women's Centre at the time and refused to give it to them. And it really took a lot of fight to get it. And in fact, even the recommendation of the manager to the councillors had all of the councillors feeling, well, we can't break from that recommendation. And only I had a letter from, again, a woman minister to say that, well, if the site is given, you know, I'll fund it, or at least partially fund it. Yeah. Now, at that point, the site was given to the Now Women's Centre. But I felt it was like going back 20 years at the meeting the other night, because, in fact, everybody that spoke virtually felt that either they didn't understand what the centre was about or why it was there, and certainly felt that the representation of the council, even though it would only be 10% of the council because there are only two women there out of 21, they felt, or they seemed to feel and suggest, that in fact they represented women just as well as women themselves did. So my question really has to be, what way are we going to address that? There are 51% of the population is women. But at this stage, we have to find out.
But there's yourself and Peggy Nolan. How does it make you feel when a women's group comes in and says, we're not being represented here?
Well, they didn't say that. Now, I don't think that's what they were suggesting. But what they were saying was that they felt that that representation, while it was good, it meant they had to rely on two women out of 21 to put policy forward, and as Tess has said, to actually be proactive as opposed to reactive. But I hate to tell Tess this, having been at Dáil level, I'm afraid that's the way politics seems to work in Ireland. Because every single day in the Dáil when I was there, the one thing that struck me was, what does the opposition bring up in the Dáil? What was in the papers or what was on the media the day before.
All right, Tess, you want to come in there?
I did want to come in there because, in actual fact, the councillors do have to say. We were at the council meeting where they decided to sell the land to the developer, for example. The councillors had to make the decision to build on the floodplain. So it's a bit disingenuous to say that those decisions are made at executive level.
No, but what I'm saying is strategy is all handed down to the councillors. There's very little coming from the council chamber that will say, this is our vision of where we want to take Longford and where it needs to go, because they're actually getting it handed to them and saying, this is the national directive, we have to respond to this.
Well, not necessarily, because their corporate plan, for example, it was written up, but they had to pass it. The councillors had to pass it. They could have at that point decided, well, this isn't the plan for Longford. I mean, that's in their
very
gift.
Very rare they do that. Very rare. May?
Yeah, can I just say that in relation, we'll say just because I was a councillor actually when the floodplains were built on. And I have to say, I'm as angry as you are about it. And yet I was part of the system that approved it. But I didn't approve it lightly, nor did Dennis Lennon nor Alan Mitchell. And they particularly, I remember, with me, opposed the building on the floodplains. We absolutely opposed it. And we were told in no uncertain terms, sorry, you're not technically qualified. You don't know enough about it. We're telling you attenuation tanks will sort that out. We have to take that expertise on board. We can't just decide that we don't think it's the right thing. And then you also have to take the 21, or, well, the balance of the other councillors with you. So I appreciate where you're coming from, but it's not as simple as that. But my question has to be this, because this is 20 years going around in circles. 51% of the population is women. We have never, ever written to every single one, and it requires somebody to do it, perhaps the National Women's Council, because you're affiliated to them. And when you see the group of women's groups that are affiliated to it, if women really want to partake, they are really going to have to be more organised, and they're certainly going to have to support women, be it in mentoring or in a very proactive way. And that would require all of those groups that are affiliated to the National Women's Council of Ireland, and indeed with the lead role, the National Women's Council of Ireland, writing to every woman in this county, in this country, to find out, are they happy voting for men? Do they feel men are representing them well enough? Because there's no point in beating this forever and saying, we as women must represent women's issues and only us.
Right.
The reality is 51% of the population are not supporting women. And I think it was Paddy Belton said it at the meeting on where he got elected. There were two very capable women, as he said, on his ticket, and they weren't elected. So there's something wrong. And we need to know from women themselves, do they not wish to have women solely representing them? Do they feel that, you know, and that has to be established.
Right.
And I would suggest that the National Women's Council of Ireland could take that as a project to write to every woman in the country and say, is this what you want?
Okay.
Are you happy with it?
Well, Joe Flaherty.
I think what women want is good representation, whether it's a man or a woman.
Yeah.
That's what they want. And I suppose, first of all, I'd have to applaud the Women's Centre for the initiative that they've taken. It's not going to be a miracle cure. It's not going to happen overnight. It's certainly a slow burn. And as Tess says, it's a case of trying to influence future decision. A lot of what has happened, we're probably not going to get to change. But if we look at what women have done very successfully in Longford, obviously the Women's Centre is a huge success. We have the Women's Business Network. If you talk to marketeers, they'll tell you that the biggest decision makers in Ireland are women. I think women are very astute lobbyists. If you want something done, they'll certainly affect it. And I think there's a need probably for every group in the county to mobilise the way that the women's group have done. They've taken the lead on it. And I think it's a positive development. I think they're realistic and they're pragmatic enough as a group to know that the success that they can get is limited and it is a slow burn. Mm. And I think, you know, they've stood the test of time. I think probably, Tess, you must be, without making you feel old, she's probably certainly, I would associate her 20 years with women's issues and women's affairs. So she's in it for the long haul, and they're not expecting. A lot of people, unfortunately, come into the local political scene and they think, geez, I'm going to change this thing all overnight. That's not going to happen. And I think what Tessa may have been long enough on the block to know that won't happen.
But just when you mention politics, it's true to say that it is a very, very difficult thing for a woman to get chosen by her party at local level, to move up through the ranks, to get into a position to get nominated on a ticket for an election in the first place. So it's from way out they have to be targeting their life towards this.
Well, I think it's difficult for anybody, a man or a woman, to come up through the party.
But especially
they're not in here to say it is. I don't know, because I'm not within the party structure. But you can see, certainly in Longford, we have women that have come to the highest echelons in May, and who came through independent first and then joined what was a small party at the time, and certainly bucked a trend and took a seat when everybody said she wasn't going to take a seat. Mm. So, you know, it's... it depends as well on the person. I think if you need a very strong character, certainly you need probably to be
a big commitment.
200% stronger than maybe your male equivalent. But
all right, Tess, you want to come in there?
I did want to come in because I suppose we're not saying that we want to go for election or we want to be elected to the council. But I mean, the council's own plan states that it wants more citizen involvement in the decisions that are going to impact on their lives. Now, not every citizen can be elected, but I think you said, Joe, what we're doing is open to any group. For example, people with disabilities would much prefer that Longford was much more accessible to people with disabilities. We've all heard about when the houses were built in Fondamans with no back doors. We've heard about, for example, the difficulties with storage radiators. So if there was a bit more consultation with citizen groups, well, then I think you would have a better community for everybody. I mean, at this point, we're not talking about getting elected. We're talking about having our say, basically, on all of the issues that impact on our lives in Longford. It's not just women's issues, because... The issues in Longford impact on every, you know, the decisions impact on everybody, men and women and families.
All right, may I briefly
I'll try to be brief, but it's hard to be. But I actually got the distinct impression, to be honest with you, Tess, on the day, that what the elected representatives were saying, you must get elected if you want to have the say, the kind of say that you're talking about. And I have to say that women on the ground at a micro level are prepared to do all the slogging. They're involved in all of the community groups, all of the welfare groups, and yet when it comes to actually being at the political coalface, they don't seem to want to be there, or at least not, they don't have the same hunger for it as men appear to have. And can I just give you a couple of stats? I know they bore people sometimes. In the democracies, there are 44,782 people elected, of which 8,432, now I'm talking about MPs, or the equivalent of MPs, 3 out of 4 members of the EU Parliament are members. Ireland is the worst participation of women in politics at national level, with just 14%. Finland has 62%. There's no female governor of any national central bank in the whole of the EU. 65% of the civil service general grades are women. There's 76% of the clerical grades in the civil service are all women. 25% of the secretaries general are all that are women. Mm. So you see, if you want to change the system, you're going to have to get involved somewhere. And I believe that politics is a very powerful way in which you can change it. And so I know what Tess is saying. They want input into the council, and I would be only too delighted to facilitate them. But I think the chair said that the way in which the structures exist, that can't happen in the way in which you would like it to do. And that's why I think that women's groups, really, if they mean business and if they really want more representation of women, they're going to have to come out, first of all, be asked, is that what they want? And then to get in behind it and mentor it.
Okay, just to move on to another subject, and one of the big stories has been the Tracy Faye story and a child who died in state care. Joe Flaherty, did that story shock you? Were you one of those people who just say, I wouldn't be surprised, it's chaotic, it's ad hoc the way people are cared for like that?
I suppose at the outset, it's a very tragic case. I suppose on a personal level, I felt it was disappointing that it has become such a political issue. I think it's disappointing that a political party, and I'll be accused of being political at this point, have hijacked what is a very tragic case, and a tragic case for the deceased, but also for all her family. That said, it is a hugely important issue. I think the big issue is how we care for young people in Ireland. And I think if we step back from that first, the big problem is that, you know, there's been a breakdown in society, been a breakdown in family, and that just didn't happen yesterday. You know, we've had a generational stigma of abuse, broken families, you know, crime-ridden estates and everything. And it's you're not going to change this overnight. It's a bit like, you know, trying to bring women into politics. It's not going to happen instantaneously. The problem is, certainly we have a problem with the care, but it's still, if you look at the care model we have in Ireland, it's probably as good, if not better, than a lot of other European countries. The problem is, when it goes wrong, it can invariably have tragic consequences. Then, unfortunately, because it is a civil service, there isn't a high level of accountability. So, you know, I'm not qualified to come in with a magic wand and say what we need to do with or how we need to care for children. But certainly there are problems. But at the same time, there's an awful lot of people doing an awful lot of good for people as social workers, doing probably work way beyond what they should be doing for them. The other point I would like to raise on as well is the whole legal issue. The legal issue is not social worker friendly. You know, we have a case going through the courts at the minute. And, you know, we can't talk too much about it, but particularly a tragic case of a young family being abused by very close relatives. And in at least half the case probably wouldn't have come to court if the social workers were able to take the children into care. But because a right-wing religious group came in and sided with the family, that didn't happen. So it's not as straightforward, and there's a lot of things in it, but very tragic case. I don't have the solutions. I would love to, I'd love to see it, but you know, there's rights and wrongs on all sides.
All right, Tess.
I just wanted to say I agree totally with Joe that there is a breakdown in society. There are very many very vulnerable families, and if they got the support early on. But when you think that the community development programme and the very programmes on the ground that were helping those families are now being cut back and resources taken away from them, instead of giving more resources to those very supports in the community that could possibly, I'm not saying it could because that particular case was very, very complex, but that could at least help vulnerable families to stay together.
And if you take the basic principle of where a child out of hours needed to go and report to a Garda station to be held while they were trying to get them sorted out, I mean, a 9-to-5 service for something like this?
Well, you see, this is the thing that I suppose I know there was a letter in the paper today where it said that by the time in that particular case, it could have been too late. And very often it is. By the time the children come to the attention of the social workers, it's nearly too late to help the family. But if there are supports on the ground in the society where there are vulnerable families, I think if you get in early enough, you have a better chance of having a good outcome than...
May Sexton.
Yeah, I suppose agreeing with what both Joe and Tess have said, I mean, I honestly think that we have to look at this slightly differently, because to be honest with you, I don't think institutions or the state are fit to cope as a body. You know, the only substitute for a parent is another parenting group. And that means, if possible, two women who are prepared to foster. And I think this is where we're falling down badly. I honestly think that we need to go back to train people, specifically target people who can be trained, incentivized, and put children into those families and expand that service. Because, look, even as we've said, ordinary families today are finding it difficult. You know, they're in the fight against their children getting involved in drugs and in drink and in all other, sexually promiscuous behaviour. You won't stop that. But when you have a family situation that doesn't have other needs, then it sometimes is contained. But to put children into an institution and expect that that institution is going to be able to cope, that can't happen. So we've got to go back and look at where the fostering of children, training particular people to foster, even single people can foster if they have the 24/7 backup. And that's where it must come in. And I agree, it's regrettable that the CDP programmes are being cut back, because they're the areas that are targeting these young and vulnerable families at a very young age. And it's a disgrace, really, to see that that's where the cuts are being made. I couldn't agree with you more, Tess, on that. And I really just think that it's the fostering area, no more than the carers, are the forgotten people in this country. And they really need to go back to look at that model and expand it and fund it.
All right. Want to...
Before we move off that, probably it ties up probably the two things we discussed so far, and it's really everything in Ireland at the minute seems to be reactionary. We react to everything, and much of what maybe Tess has said and May also is, you know, we need to be interventionist in Ireland, and maybe that takes a long-term view. And if the demise of the Celtic Tiger and a massive recession does anything for us, it should give us the opportunity to plan. And I think that's why groups like Tess is coming to the fore, and everybody coming to the table. You know, we had this thing in Farmley House, the big think tank, that we probably got nothing out of. But if we do a bottom-up one and we start thinking from the community and start, you know, trying to, you know, we're not going to go back to dancing at the crossroads and things like that. But certainly if we do go back and think, and how can we reinvent this country, and, you know, it putting family at the core of it as well. And I think that's what we have to do.
I'll just stay with you there to move on to the next topic, Joe. Banks, NAMA, empty houses all around the country, no credit flow. We're hearing about businesses closing, good viable businesses closing, because they can't get credit and they can't get paid then by their customers, because they're also getting credit problems on the other side. Is there any solution to that?
Probably coming at it from a business end, the biggest crisis facing the country at the minute is the lack of credit. I would have come from a small business background. Ireland operated on an overdraft, you know, and a lot of UK banks come in. They don't realise just how hugely dependent. If you look at a typical small business, maybe of a turnover of 1 million, they 3 years ago probably had an overdraft of 20,000. With any bank, that's probably cut to 5,000 now. All their suppliers are on direct debits. It doesn't add up, you know, and they still have to pay for their family, they have to pay for tuition fees, whatever else. It's a ticking time bomb out there at the minute. And I don't think, with the best will in the world, politicians actually realise just how bad it is. I think you have to be in business yourself, you have to be at the cold face, and you have to see the trauma. It's breaking marriages, it's breaking families, it's driving people to suicide. I think, you know, we as we said, we have the young case of Tracy. I think it's a ticking time bomb, and, you know, a lot of people say there's a lot worse issues in Haiti and things, but this is a massive problem, and I think we're only scraping at the belly of it. I think there isn't a political will to face up to it, because probably if you look at the likes of Fianna Fáil, they would style themselves as the party that came to power on the back of small business and the farming community, but they're the people that's really suffering now, and I don't think Fianna Fáil have acknowledged it, Fine Gaels haven't acknowledged it, and nobody has. And is there a solution? You're probably going to ask me. Certainly we need to free up. The problem is banks are in a crisis. You only have to look at a balance sheet on the bank, and people can say banks were greedy and banks brought around brought around their own demise, and in many respects it did. But if you look at their balance sheets, there's no way for them to turn this around. If you look at viable businesses that were making millions, billions, and now suddenly are making huge losses, you can't turn that around overnight.
Yeah. You know, I get awful worried when everyone turns around and says the political will needs to be there to sort out the banks. I mean, the banks are the ultimate, the gunslingers throughout the Celtic Tiger that were doing their own way. Regulation was nowhere. And maybe made from a political point of view, if there is a blame game, it starts at regulation. That's what didn't happen.
Well, you know what? I always say you can't regulate for honesty. Do you know what I mean? Really and truly. What drove the banks was, you know, there was, for example, we availed of the Section 23 here in Longford. But what happened was the banks then fed on that by, you know, giving bonuses to their managers when they gave out the loans. I mean, they drove it all. But what annoys me now is that those same guys are still in the banks. That whole culture still exists. And that's what worries me. It was my view that Anglo should have been let go to the wall anyway. I don't think it should have been propped up with the money that has gone into it. That money should have gone elsewhere. You know, I mean, I am concerned. You're right. I mean, it's reactionary. Everything's reactionary. Do you know what I'm worried about at the moment? I'm worried about the pension fund. Has that been robbed? Do we know the whole story there? I'm of the view we don't, you know, and I think that's another thing coming down the line. I don't know. I think it's squeezing the lifeblood out of small businesses, Joe. You're right. I come from a small business background myself. And I have to say that it's regrettable that Postbank and Halifax are gone, because now we're back to the two main banks. And unfortunately, they were the cause of a lot of it. And you're right. I don't think there is a political feel about it at all, because being in the Dáil, it does actually cosset you. From, okay, you go back to your constituency at the weekend, but I think the ministers themselves are cosseted and they're listening to the big businesses and they're listening to all of the wrong people as to how to address it, you know.
All right, Tess, we can see around Longford and in every other town around the country that there's a real price being paid by ordinary people trying to live ordinary lives because somebody somewhere in a very high paid job in all of the banks just went crazy for 10 years.
But I think that's what I was saying earlier as well, is that I don't think that people are going to sit back anymore and have these decisions that have that kind of bad, really bad impact on their lives just happen and sit back and take it. Basically, that's what happened. Like, most of the people here in Longford, when they saw all this building going on, like, everybody was saying to me, who's going to live in these houses? Who is going to live in these houses? And everybody was saying that. And yet people were getting planning permission and they were building these big estates. There they are now, there's something like 90 of them in Longford that are unfinished. What's going to happen to all of those?
Something crosses my mind when you say that, Tess. You're right. We were all going around saying, who's going to go into these houses? Who's going to fill these units? We have one down at the bottom of the town, unfortunately. We'll be in the Nama bunch, I presume. And yet, what are we doing? We're proposing to build another one out on the outskirts of Longford, while the one in the centre of the town is perfectly adequate to cope. So, I mean, why are we doing this? It's going to decimate the centre of the town. I know there are views that have expressed by others that don't agree with that, but I do believe you can't be building another new shopping centre out on the edge of town just because we should.
But May,
sustainability, that's what it should be.
That's an ongoing project at the moment, but let me ask you, how did a local authority allow those houses to be built on the Fonderman site? To be quite honest, they look awful. They weren't properly done in terms of back doors, as Tess is after saying. There's been problems with all sorts of things going on. And the council, as I understand it, are in debt over that.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't on the council at the time. But I can tell you the same thing is going to happen with the building of this new halting site, which I have objected to. Almost 1.8 million has been allocated from the council or from the Department of the Environment to build another halting site in Longford when we've only three people on the existing one. And on top of that, what did we find? The whole design is flawed. And if we hadn't had the flood, it would have been halfway built at this stage, or at least it would have been started, and we're going to have a flood on it. Who's going to stop that? I've been told that I can't stop it, but I can tell you I'm going to make enough noise about it to try to stop the minister from providing that money. Another 200,000 apparently has been allocated to address that problem that has been created. But I'm getting no support from the council. They tell me there's nothing they can do. So, Tess, you see, sometimes one voice isn't enough in the middle of it. Do you know what I mean? The plan was decided 2 years ago to build one, probably laudable. But at the same time, you have to balance that with the needs of today. So 2 years later, we're now in a different scenario. We're going to build on what is already a floodplain and spend 2 more million of taxpayers' money. Mm. Makes no sense.
Yeah, Joe, can I just bring that point to you? It often seems to me that in Longford here, when we look back on developments and we look when things are finished and they're built and they're there, that you wonder how all this fits into a plan. Is there a plan? Who has seen the plan? Who got public consultation on this plan for future plan for Longford? It's something that really, you know, we always are reactionary. We sit back and say, why did that happen? You know, do we need to start again in Longford and say, lads, we need a proper plan that we can all support going forward so that no developer can walk in here in another 5 years and say, you need another shopping centre. If it's not in the plan, it doesn't happen.
Well, I suppose to go back a bit, I think the banks certainly fueled it. But by the same token, I suppose if we're honest, we all played a part in it ourselves in that we probably got drunk on the greed at the time of the Celtic Tiger. Every guy that had a bit of land at all, he was suddenly thinking, can I get houses on this? And then he was talking to family or something and everybody was selling sites and everybody was buying a house. And your mother or your father were telling you, geez, you're crazy if you don't go out and buy a house. So in many respects, we fueled a lot of this ourselves and now we're going to pay the price. But ultimately, the blame does lie with the banks. Probably as I said earlier, now is the time for reflection. Now is the time to take a step back. We've made mistakes. If we go back to 20 years ago, probably when you were starting in politics first, made the big thing was derelict sites. There's all these derelict sites around Longford.
That's
and
right.
Now we're back 20 years time full circle. And now we're looking at derelict. Celtic Tiger got rid of the derelict sites, or so we thought that was going to happen. But now suddenly we have probably, we have 19 of them straight away right across the county where we never had derelict sites.
All
and
right.
We've just come back full circle. So definitely we do. We need a plan. And as Tess says, there is a county development plan for the county. And now is the time for everybody to get their input into that at an organised level and certainly lobby and make representation to the council and bang down their doors. Councillors are now, may probably won't agree with me, but they are very well paid. You only have to see the salaries that the councillors get. And, you know, their doors need to be knocked down. They're there, they're public representatives, and we're entitled to go and make strong representations to them. And if we can go as a group like the Women's Centre and make very forceful representations, then we need to do it. We need to start getting value for money. We're obsessed with value for money in this country now, but we need to start getting it from our elected representatives.
All right, I want to end on a positive note and then go around the table here to get some views as to how, if there was one thing, Tess, you could do to, I suppose, shine a bit of light on Longford in this recession and give us a boost, what would it be?
Well, I was thinking about that. I suppose under the Rural Development Programme, we've been promised 8 million for Longford. And I agree with Joe, we can't just dribble that money just out across the county in dribs and drabs and leave no legacy. I think there should be a plan for Longford and a strategy around spending that money that would leave a legacy in the county. I think we should pay more attention to the corporate plan, the county development plan, and we should really get the information in that. And I suppose the media does have a role to play there, really, because we've tried to decipher it for ourselves. It's very, very difficult. So the first step, the very first step people need is clear information. And that is the really first rung in any kind of participation in decision making. So like the plan should really be translated into what is it actually going to mean for Longford Town or for Drumlish or wherever, you know, the bits that are in it. And that's the money that I see coming down the tracks, the 8 million, if it is going to actually come. And again, that there should be a strategy around how that money is going to be spent.
So start afresh. All right, May.
Yeah, but there you see where Tess is absolutely right. The lead agency in the spending of that money will be the local authority. So she's right in the sense that Longford Women's Link have to have their say in how that happens. So, you know, she knows my door is open to that. But if I were to say what I will be doing, at local level, at local authority level, is to try to get somebody with a bit of vision. I met with a businessman yesterday who has a plan. That plan can be operated, it will create a large number of jobs. It will require huge infrastructure like ICT and broadband. It can be operated from anywhere in the country. It will start off with 10 jobs and it will expand, you know, exponentially. it will require that kind of forward thinking by the local authority to be one step ahead of all of the other local authorities to provide that broadband and the infrastructure for such a development. And by the way, I'm hounding this man to death to make sure it comes to Longford, but I'm just saying that's the kind of thing I can do because I'm at local authority level, is to try to push the ideas that I think are for the future, have somebody with a bit of vision in there to move in that direction so that we are one head, step ahead of the posse, because that's all we can do, is to provide that infrastructure to ensure that those who want to invest can and have a good infrastructure to back up all of the plans that they have. Mm. It's all I can think of. I mean, I did propose recently at the local authority that we contact the department to reduce rates and to have a graded rate system to try to encourage people to come in to utilise the empty units that are around. Apparently, we don't have autonomy in that, and that has to be approved by the department, so I'm hoping it will. But, you know, if there's one thing I'm doing, I am meeting with these people. That plan, by the way, has gone to Europe for evaluation. Take a little while, but I'm confident it will happen.
Okay.
But the infrastructure has to be there, and that's where I'd be pushing the local authority.
All right, Joe Flaherty, one good idea.
Try and pick up the pieces, I suppose, from the Celtic Tiger. Tess, well, from our times in France, will be well aware of what they've done in French villages and small French towns. There's very specific schemes to help bakers and to help other traditional shops. You know, Longford retail has really struggled. I think we need to, as a community, put an arm around it. At a personal level, we can all make sure that we shop in Longford. But then I think probably the likes of the Chamber and the Council need to come together and need to start doing positive things. If there is an empty shop, I think they need to paint over the window, or maybe just paint a shop front on it or something like that. But they need to start doing different weekend events, say Patrick's weekend. Really, we should have done a St. Patrick's themed week for that, for shopping in Longford. Similarly, for when Easter comes, we have local drama groups. We have a lot of things that we could bring together. We could bring musicians onto the street. We have to make Longford vibrant again, and we have to do things to try and, you know, lift the air of depression that is around the place. They're the small things that we can do. There's big things that I'd love to see done as well. I think we missed a huge opportunity with the Celtic Tiger in that we didn't get a second golf course. We didn't get a major hotel that we badly needed. The big thing that really pains me about the Celtic Tiger is probably Carrie Glass. It was the finest country house, well, second finest after Lady Georgina's in the county. In all likelihood, if nothing happens now, it's going to go to rack and ruin. I think that there needs to be a will from the council to say, look, we need to rescue this. We need to rescue that house. They may not do anything with it for 10 years, but if you look at King House in Boyle, Belvedere House in Mullingar, and I know it costs Westmeath County Council a lot of money, but I think Longford County Council need to grab that bull by the horns, and they need to save that house. You know, there's probably a latent Republican in me, but maybe I'm coming into the latter life. But I think we do need it. It is part of our heritage, and yeah. I think it's a very historic house, and I think it would be a crying shame if it goes the way of all the other housing estates.
All right. Okay. Joe Flaherty, May Sexton and Tess Murphy, thank you very much for joining us. And finally, on Leader Talk, it's our very own Theatre of Dreams. It's the Flan Zero to those in the know, and otherwise it's Flancare Park to the rest of us. The First Division League season is upon us, and we've been talking to the new boss at Longford Town, that's Tony Cousins. Firstly, to this new squad that he's assembled.
It's a mixture of a squad. It's players that have played a good few games in the league. The likes of John Lester, Chris Deans, Philly Bourne, Gary Cronin. Aaron Shanahan's played a fair bit, Peter Hines, and then you have a mixture of young lads in there that are itching to do well. You know, I think by the end of the season a few people will be saying, Jesus, they've done well, and there's a couple of lads coming from junior football as well that have impressed already, like JP McDonough. So the way it is, I think it's a tidy little squad, and there's a good balance. I didn't want to bring in too many over 30s. So, I think Gary's the oldest at 30. And other than that, the players I've mentioned are all around 27, 26, and they're experienced players. So, I think there's a good balance in the squad.
Now, I know matters off the field are not your main concern at the moment. You're mostly concerned with getting the lads out there and getting them competitive in this league. But, I mean, it's a tight situation financially and in every other way for clubs like Longford Town.
Yeah, the way it is, that's just what you have to deal with. Obviously, I've got the budget. It's the same as last year, and you just work the budget. And the most important thing is once I'm told to work a budget and once the players are paid and everything is done right off the pitch, well, I can't ask any more of the people around the club. And up to now, they've been first class in everything we've done so far. So, you just have to work your budget. Whatever you have, you've got to work it to the best of your ability. And hopefully, time will tell whether we've done that. But I would certainly think that the squad is an improvement on last year. But results will dictate that.
All right, just on a final point, what would you say at the start of this season now to Longford Town supporters who maybe were there in the last number of years and in the good times but have decided not to take their trip out to Flancare Park in recent seasons?
Well, I think they're different times as well. You know, there was a lot of money at the club when they got to the cup finals and that. We were in the league at Galway and Longford's budget was bigger and we were full-time. So, you know, I think you have to be realistic in what the club are able to spend. I know those years left the club in a bad financial position, and it's one thing that the people that run the club now don't want to get into. But I would just say to them that the thing is, I have a competitive squad there that will give everything. If they go along to the games, they'll see that they'll give everything in the games, and certainly we'll be competitive this year, but we need the supporters to get out and get behind us, because that's how you build a successful club. It's the bodies coming through the gates, and it's so important that they make the effort to do that.
Well, that's Leader Talk for this week. If you want to get in touch with us here, you can email us at leadertalkpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, in the meantime, if you want to keep in touch with all the latest news, check out longfordleader.ie. We're back with another Leader Talk podcast on March the 19th. Until then, from Fintan Duffy, it's bye-bye.